Welcome to Campaign 2015. This is your host, Peter Guerrero for KPTZ, bringing you the election debate sponsored by the League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, the Port Townsend Leader, PTTV, and KPTZ. There's a primary election coming up on August the 4th. Ballots go out on July 15th. There's one contested city council race with more than two candidates, and that's for position six, with candidates Paul Rice, Todd Wexman, and Amy Smith. Let's go to the debate, and Ruth Gordon is the league moderator.
So, candidates, thank you all for coming tonight. Thank you for signing up. This is it's an interesting journey when you run for public office. So we're going to start with a two-minute self-introduction. I would like your introduction to include why you're running for the seat on the city council and how your qualifications and experience prepare you for the duties of this public office. So, Paul, would you like to
start? My name is Paul Rice, and I'm running for city council position six because as a child, I loved playing connect the dots. By drawing lines between these seemingly disparate spots, eventually a picture would emerge, and that was very exciting for me. And as I grew older, I never got tired of playing connect the dots, though my medium changed. For the first half of my 20s, I was an advocate for homeless and mentally divergent folks in the cities of Boston and Cambridge, Massachusetts. I would do my best to connect folks from the streets they lived in and around to the many services surrounding them, from showers to beds and to jobs. Along the way, I would try to tell their stories as a journalist. And this was a sad picture to draw, for many folks enduring homelessness fall through the cracks. And our society makes no place for them, no matter how hard the caring try. The line, once drawn, often disappears. For the second half of my 20s, I lived in Seattle and worked at a tech startup where I would connect end users to the product we offered. Helping folks understand a new system was the sum of my work, and I learned diplomacy skills on both the front and back ends of my labor. I connected dots for happier pictures and grew in ability as the company did in profitability, but something was missing from my life, so I decided to move to Port Townsend. In Port Townsend, I found the community I was missing, 9,000 dots to connect. It didn't take long before I had partnered with some cool and creative folks and opened what was allegedly a very cool and happening bar. The Pin Bar was a late-night gathering place for young folks of all ages. It was a success. But now that it's over, I'm ready to connect the dots again, to help folks see how their government works for them, to remember to celebrate the city's history but not get bogged down in the way things used to be. I'm ready to connect the dots for you as a member of your city government. Thank you.
My name is Amy Smith. About a couple hours ago, I threw out my piece of paper. I didn't like a single thing I'd written on it. So I figured I would just come and talk to you from my heart. I am running for city council because I love Port Townsend, because Port Townsend has been the place that has saved my life, and I would like to return that favor. I came to Port Townsend when I was 18 as a homeless youth, and I found the boiler room at that time. That's a whole other story that's going to take way more than 2 minutes to tell, though. So in that time frame, I grew up between 2000 and now in this town. This town has nurtured me and given me solace and hope and care. And it's taught me empathy and has given me a way that I can reach out to the people in Port Townsend to return that favor. I have studied business administration. I am the executive director of the Boiler Room, a nonprofit social services hub in downtown Port Townsend. These experiences have given me the skills necessary to move into government. I have strategic planning experience. I have the ability to, I think I already said this, so apparently I also have the ability to repeat myself. I have the ability to listen to others well. And I'm hoping that I can do that for you. Thank you.
And here's Todd Wexman's introduction.
Alongside Thomas Jefferson, I'm for wise and frugal government, something we've seen very little of during recent years. An ill-advised spending spree has put our city into near bankruptcy and undermined a good deal of our small-town atmosphere in the process. Our very most creative and imaginative peoples have been thrust to the sidelines and or bypassed altogether. The cost of living in Port Townsend has skyrocketed over the past 15 years. The richest amongst us may be little affected by such. Those living on the edge, young families and the elderly on fixed incomes, struggle to make ends meet. Nothing less than a radical departure from business as usual is called for. I can bring a lifetime's worth of hands-on experience in many fields to the council proceedings. Think, Yale architecture, fame and fortune in a city of 3 million, contracts to teach at leading universities in a variety of programs, urban studies, the social sciences, and public administration. A highly successful stint as the elected mayor of a small town in Illinois, and 15 years in the thick of things here in Port Townsend. Earth Day 2020, move on, PT Shorts. Experience counts.
Thank you all. This next question regards what committees you feel your portfolio of skills fits you to serve, and which would you most like to serve on, and what would you like to accomplish through that service on the committee structure of City Council? For those that don't know, there are four internal committees related to city government. They're finance and budget, community development and land use, information and technology, and general services and special projects. Those have to do with the governance of the city, and city council people are appointed to those committees by the mayor, and it consists of staff and council, and they discuss issues and policies. In addition, there are many other outside committees that people are appointed to. They run the gamut from Jefferson Transit Board to the Board of Health to Law and Justice Council to Jeffcom 911. There's a wide variety of external committees that that people on council do serve on. So those are one of the main ways that you make a difference on council. So I'd like to know what committees do you feel fit your portfolio of skills, and which would you most like to serve on, and what would you like to accomplish through that service?
So a large portion of what I do right now is serve on committees. I'm a member of several nonprofit boards in town. My personal expertise actually lies in budgeting, and that is something that I would be actually very happy to serve on for the Port Townsend City Council. Additionally, I am interested in community development and land use. That falls a little bit under the money matters for me. On outside boards or committees, I am interested in the transportation and transit. I do ride the bus to work. I don't own a car. And those are my big, strong pushes there.
And Todd Wexman responds.
Gosh, I'd like to be on all of them. I guess budget's probably the most important one of those four. It sort of determines where you're going to, well, it determines where you're going to spend your money. And I think that, you know, I'd like to see a lot more money directed to affordable housing. I've done some work on that subject, by the way. In the back of the room, you can see I've been in contact with Serber and a number of other people and gotten almost nowhere. That's about all I have to say.
I would be most interested in serving on the Community Development and Land Use Committee. A lot of what I hope to accomplish on City Council involves examining zoning restrictions, especially ones that are tied to perhaps restricting the availability or the ability to develop affordable rental housing. And for those who don't know, which it's not always evident on the surface unless you go on Craigslist, Port Townsend is in a sort of rental, affordable rental housing crisis, could be said right now. You have lots of families who are unable to find rentals that are anywhere below $1,200. And if they do find them, a lot of times they're going out into the county. And so we're losing that density. And finding new ways to work with our planning department through the Community Development and Land Use Committee in terms of lessening zoning restrictions, promoting tiny houses, finding ways to make that a possibility, as well as parking restrictions, especially for affordable developments. The parking restrictions oftentimes will be huge, huge roadblocks for developers that may want to come in and create affordable housing so that more of our young families can afford to live here. But they're met with these issues. So working with the Community Development and Land Use Committee, I would hope to address some of those concerns and see what's possible. Thank you.
And this is another question related to budget. Some citizens worry more about tax increases, and others worry more about reduced or inadequate services. Some people worry about both at the same time because, of course, they're both an issue. What considerations would be most important to you when considering whether to raise taxes or reduce services if you had to take such action to balance the budget?
And Todd Wexman responds first to this question.
You know, this is one of these questions that it simplifies things. I mean, you can really do both. You can lessen taxes and then be very careful about how you spend your money and still provide the services that are necessary. Our problem is here that nobody really has put their mind to making some very hard and imaginative decisions. And that's one of the things that I have been doing all my life.
The PDN primary questionnaire, asked this question as well. And my answer to them, somewhat jokingly, but was that I would cut the city council salaries. Because essentially, that wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt the public, and it wouldn't hurt the city councilors. Probably, maybe that's an advanced judgment. But in essence, when you cut things, when you ask the question about cutting things, it's a pointed question. So I sort of reject the question, in that I think that there are often so many creative ways you can find. To balance. And the first things that usually end up going are things that later we say, oh, wow, why did we cut our parks department like that? Like, you know, this is something that has value beyond the immediately visible. So I like to think that there's always a way to put off important services, to put off things, not to cut or destroy, but in fact, make do with what you have for the time with a plan to come back around and support those entities that were the victims of necessity.
In my answer to this question for the PDN as well, I rejected the question. I indicated that I feel very strongly that you have to make sure that you have exhausted all sources of funding before you cut a program, and that the only time to really cut a program is when it is not meeting a pre-indicated set of markers. So it has to have success markers set up and built into the program in order to cut it effectively. This does come from my work in social services. And I feel very strongly about finding more money for the things that I do there. That's not always have the ability to do that for city government, but I think that there is always the ability, in addition to the possibility of raising taxes, of looking for funding from other sources, grant funding, to ask the community to step up to support the things that they find important.
No elected official can please everyone. So how will you deal with dissenting views and strongly held interests that are contrary to what your decision might be?
As the owner of the Pin Bar, I met with a lot of dissenting opinion, but was very open to it always. And I remember one particular citizen named Lou, who works in a garage, would constantly complain about the cigarette butts that I was constantly trying to keep clean and keep the sidewalk clean. And, you know, but Lou, I would always listen to Lou, and he would always say, Paul, thank you for listening to this curmudgeon. I know I'm a curmudgeon, but, you know, this is the way I see the city, this is the way I want to see the city. You know, and even if you can't control it all, I just appreciate the fact that you listen to me. And I'm not saying he's endorsing me, but at the same time, that's how I've been able to survive. That's how the pin bar was able to survive longer than many people anticipated, is because I was always open to listening, talking, and communicating, and finding a way to work out a solution. And I'm never unavailable to people, no matter how much we might disagree. And I would never put myself in the position where I couldn't be in the same room with somebody. That to me would be an absolute failure, and I would hold myself accountable for that. I want to always be able to be in the same room with the people, especially the people who we need to interact with when we're working on city affairs, on county affairs, all of that. I consider myself to be well-equipped to work with any form of interactions like that. Thank you.
As I previously mentioned, I work for the Boiler Room, which is another one of those spots that invites dissent and invites contrary opinions and contrarians even. So this is something else that I am very well versed in. We have been offering through the Boiler Room a series of nonviolent communication classes, which have come in very helpful in my ability to both listen and listen with understanding and empathy. So sometimes the thing that somebody is telling you isn't necessarily what they're trying to say, and you have to listen for the need that they are trying to communicate underneath the words that they may be approaching you with volume. So hearing and being able to listen for the need is what I would like to be able to do.
Next, Todd Wexman.
I always first come to a person with an idea. And it's usually a pretty good idea, since I've had a lot of experience in the design and environmental fields. I tried to get people interested in an idea once. Was the Jefferson County, Clallam County Housing Authority. I went to all the trouble of putting together a proposal with an architect in town and submitting it to the board in advance, or the secretary of the board. She was supposed to put it out in their folders that they got in ahead of the meeting where I was going to make a presentation to the board. I went to the meeting. Judy Serber wasn't there, by the way. She was on the board, but she didn't attend the meeting, which was in Port Townsend, convenient to her that time. Nobody had looked in the folder except one guy who I'd stopped to see ahead of time. And he was the guy that asked the head to put the material in the folder. But nobody in that group had bothered to read anything in the folder. And so I was bringing something new to everyone, and it was just silence in the room. You know, when I have an experience like this, I did all the right things, yet nobody cared, I get mad. And I think deservedly so.
So in the comp plan discussions that have been going on, well, the city is in a cycle of revision of the comp plan. There were discussions held, and the city identified five key areas. They are housing, jobs, quality of life for people of all ages, transportation options, and community resilience and sustainability. I'd like to ask you to select any one of these issues or any other issue that's more important, doesn't have to be about zoning and the comp plan, and discuss your ideas for how the city can play a positive role in setting the stage for meaningful progress in your area of interest. And first we'll hear from Amy Smith.
These are all issues that I work on in my day job. I have had some experience running into issues that cause difficulty that are potentially things that the city could help with. As I volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, it's come to my attention that the infrastructure costs for those houses make them far more expensive than Habitat houses in other parts of the United States, because Habitat pays to put in a large amount of the connection to the sewer and things like that. I believe that this is something that needs to be examined closely, because I think that all of these things are tied together so intrinsically that you can't actually pull them out and separate them at the level that I feel like I'm being asked to right now. If you don't have a house, you can't have a job. It's very difficult to keep a job or find a job. If you don't have the ability to have a house and have a job, you do not have the ability to maintain your quality of life. And if you don't have transportation, you can't get to your job, you can't keep your house, and all of these things add up to not having any community resilience. The city has only some ability to impact all of these things. The citizens of Port Townsend are the ones who have the most ability to make the decisions that will have the impact. And it is up to the citizens of Port Townsend, as was done in the comp plan, to not just drive what are the issues, but drive the solutions. What I think is the most important thing that the city could do isn't necessarily what everybody else thinks the most important thing that the city could do. And it's up to... I'm sorry, I've got a red card.
You've got a red card. Well, it's a big question. So next we'll hear from Todd Wexman.
All right, let's start with housing. I don't call it housing. I call it shelter, because there's a whole range of alternatives that you can think about if you talk shelter rather than housing. It's like those tents over on the tents that people put up. And you can go all the way up to a building with 12 apartments in it and so on. And that's another thing I've been pushing. Most of these things involve jobs. I mean, these building involves jobs, so you've got that built into the process. And if you're talking quality of life for people of all ages, I suppose I'd concentrate on the elderly, like I said in my beginning comments, elderly and the families with children who are struggling most of all. In terms of transportation, I actually helped get that increase in the taxes to help Jefferson County Transit. I was one of the lead people in the lead amongst the people who were involved on close to the woman who's in charge at that time. I can't remember her name. But transportation's important. I don't know what resilience. I mean, they talked about resilience. I'm not sure I know what that means. But these are all intertwined, and the challenge is to bring something together that will have an impact on all of these in all of these areas.
And finally, Paul Rice.
Thank you. Oh, and thank you for the question. I will gladly separate housing as the most important issue from what's being talked about in terms of revising the comp plan for 2016. And I'll do so partially because it's the most important issue to me right now. Also because with the new Speak Out site that the city created, there were 571 responses, I believe, and those were all from citizens who went online found it on Facebook or through email and said what was most important to them. And I believe that at one point housing was declared by like 389 respondents to that survey to be the most important thing. And I agree that they are all interconnected, but absolutely I think that you can change the language in the comp plan, especially how it interprets with the functional plans, essentially make the city, but encourage the city administration to work on affordable housing solutions, affordable rental housing. I'm not afraid to say housing because I think that it's the word that we have at this moment. I'm all about changing dialogues, but in this case, affordable housing is what's listed in the comp plan, and I think that's the good language. And there can be more language in the comp plan, and especially how that relates to the functional plans, for creating community land trusts or reviving the ones like Homeward Bound that, well, that Homeward Bound's a Port Angeles one, but I know there are some community land trusts that have fallen, sort of fallen by the wayside. Reviving those, and perhaps even using the public development authority method that has proven so successful with Fort Worden for creating an entity that promotes and provides market-protected housing for the workers and the citizens of Port Townsend who want to make this their home. Thank you.
And you're listening to Campaign 2015 election coverage on KPTZ, 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, Washington's eclectic, authentic community radio station.
Okay. Thank you all for reconvening. I think you're going to be interested to hear these questions. They're all good. I'm going to try to get to all of them, but what that means for our candidates is if you could answer succinctly, that's more time for questions. I will try not to elaborate. First, we're going to hear from Amy Smith, a member of the Chamber of Commerce, has asked, how would you promote and enhance the business environment in Port Townsend?
Well, I am also a member of the Port Townsend Main Street Board of Directors, so I am actually actively involved currently in promoting businesses in Port Townsend and promoting economic vitality in Port Townsend. I believe that the city does have the ability to help promote and to partner with organizations that are already doing this work in a way that's beneficial to both the city and to the organizations. And in doing so, then also promotes the jobs that are created by those organizations that are doing the work. So there are people on the ground already doing this.
And Todd Wexman responds to the question.
Well, one of the things I've always wondered about is why we have so many vacancies on the second and third floors of the buildings downtown. I think it would help us a lot if we had some people living downtown. And I know what the city would have to do, but I doubt if I could convince them to do a lot of the things that are on my mind. I think also we want to try to reduce rents if we can in that area to encourage new entrepreneurs to try something down there. And I think Heather has done a nice job of bringing people into the corner of the Hastings building. And actually, I had a little shop, not a shop that anybody could come to, but I decorated the windows at one point in time. This is a really complicated issue, but I feel that the city's got to look at rents that are being charged, look at the condition of the buildings, and see what it can do to encourage new entrepreneurs to settle in downtown. Not just anybody, but someone who can really add a great deal to the mix. I could go on and on, but I'm out of time.
This is Paul Rice.
So I was the owner of a for-profit business in Port Townsend, and it was a successful business. I'm a member of the Chamber and Main Street and on the Main Street Board as well. So I'm definitely interested and involved. A good portion of my friends in this community I've made through the being a business owner and through the conversations that happen downtown. And for me, I see a really great opportunity in the city looking at ways to relax the restrictions that are currently there for food trucks. So there are some restrictive codes in place that actually prevent food trucks from being open for more than 7 months out of a year. I believe it's seven. And then you can't do any cooking in the truck itself. You have to hire a commercial kitchen off-site, do your cooking there, and bring your food there. And you cannot move the location at all of your food truck. And you can see in other vibrant cities where there is a food truck culture. And we could bring that to Port Townsend. We're always looking for ways to increase the vibrancy of our downtown. And especially, you know, for the last 2.5 years, my interest has been increasing the downtown nightlife, which I think is something that we forget about sometimes, that there are people that want to go out late, of all ages, that want to spend time, you know, listening to music and having experiences, and oftentimes there's no food for them to do that. So I find that, you know, if there's a way to work, and I understand it's both with the county and the city, but finding a way to work to lessen the restrictions on food trucks, that is something I would work on.
Thank you. So this question goes first to Todd Wexman. Do you think there is a need to improve the walkability of the Upper Simsway neighborhoods and to create a better connection to the downtown area? If you do, what would you propose?
You know, I was very, very discouraged when that whole project was started. I call it the Upper Simsway Expressway that was built up there. It's an automobile-centered area now. I used to live nearby, and I sometimes would walk up the side of the road. But there's a lot of vacancies up there now. I don't know what you do with that. It was a mistake to build the thing, and it's going to be really tough to make that into a pedestrian satisfying experience.
And next, Paul Rice.
Well, that question, I think it's a great question. It's also a very pointed question, because I don't think there's a way to say no to that question without displaying yourself as being somebody who doesn't want people to walk. And I mean, Port Townsend is a walkable city. It could be more walkable, but absolutely is walkable. And I understand. I came here after the roundabouts. I know there's tension for some people about the roundabouts, but I think that, you know, as far as I can tell, a lot of that's been worked out over the years, and the roundabouts have proven to be rather convenient people traffickers or car traffickers. So how we can combine the success of the roundabouts with sidewalks, I think it's in some ways it's just a matter of time, and especially with the Howard Street extension, after 12 years, it's finally going full blast, and there's already businesses getting ready to move in. That's going to create a desire to actually, I think, put more infrastructure in and around Upper Simsway, including more sidewalks. I see great potential for it, and I think it's all we're waiting on is council to put forward a plan.
I think there's a definite need to improve the walkability of that neighborhood, because when the median was put in, it created a sort of chute. So when you're headed into town, you go around the roundabout and you go downtown, you can't access the stores on the other side of the street very easily, and there isn't a lot of actual parking in that area that isn't attached to other businesses. And when you're headed out of town, and the business is on the other side of the street, you're headed out of town, so you don't stop. You don't go back as you're headed into town, and if you see something on the other side of the street, you go down the roundabout, you don't turn around and shoot back up. So if there was the ability to, and this is a weird thing, the ability to walk, you need the ability to park first, or you need things there that creates people a desire for people to go to that area. You need businesses in that area that people want to walk or bike to. I don't know that I have an actual solution that the city can do at this point, because it is a very complicated situation, and it would take quite a bit of work.
Thank you, Amy. So this next question starts with Paul, and starts with a statement. Most of the streets and city-owned buried piping are in need of replacement. What do you think needs to be done, and how would you pay for it?
Can I borrow some money? I know that the desire of the city finding a way to pay for it is, you know, we would want development. We want development to come in to those areas that need infrastructure work, and hopefully use that land in ways that are creative and also promote other things like affordable housing and general livability. So where I would find money to do those infrastructure changes is by essentially, as I was saying before, working with the Community and Land Trust Committee on working on zoning revision, but zoning conversations, maybe, let's say. Is that political speak enough? Working on zoning to understand ways that we can make it easier for development to come in and help us fix the infrastructure. Because there are things we can do on our own. There's certainly money out there, and David, if there's money out there that we can get, David Timmons knows about it. I have confidence in that. And I don't mean that as a bad aside either. I think it's amazing if you actually look at what he's able to do with funding. It's quite brilliant. And we need to add to that a social and business outreach to the many developers in and around our city that are already in our city and working on projects to create housing that's not only affordable but will add value to our city as we continue to grow. Thank you.
The interesting thing about this question is that you can't argue with the first statement. It does need to be replaced. What do you think needs to be done at that point is a question of when do you think it needs to be done? And how would you pay for it, of course? What needs to happen is that a study needs to be done to identify the most urgent replacements, and then funding needs to be found to do those ones. If they are in such urgent need of repair that it is going to become an emergent issue, then grants need to be written for that immediately. Other than that, it needs to be done slowly, carefully, and thoughtfully.
And Todd Wexman responds to the question.
Those of you who attended the meetings last week, I think it was, where they were discussing the comp plan, the upcoming comp plan, might have heard Ken Clow bemoan the fact that he's got no money to repair the streets that need a lot of attention in this town. Now, I had to laugh when I heard that because evidently we've got plenty of money to build a new road connecting the Howard Street connector, and develop a couple roundabouts. But the thing about that is that the state pays a lot of those, pays the costs there. They don't supply a lot. It's not as easy. It's easy to get that money compared to getting a little bit of, saving a little bit of money in your budget for street repair. But we don't have that money in the budget, and Ken Clow, it must have been embarrassing for Timmons to listen to Clow say that, because everybody knows in this room that our minor streets are crumbling all over the place. Nobody's doing anything about it. We're spending $5.5 million on the connector and almost nothing to help Ken Clow.
Next question, and we move to Todd Wexman to ask, as a city councilor, what could you do to entice new businesses to town that would pay a living wage?
Well, the first thing I do is get all the people that I know involved in answering this question. It's a tough question. I once sat down very early on, and I could never do this again, with David Timmons, and we talked about social capital in town. And he actually, we talked about putting together a list of people, of social capital, in town who are especially talented and had good ideas. That's where I'd start. I'd look around the town. This is an incredibly creative bunch of people in this town. I never saw this anywhere else, and it's part of the reason that I moved here. I met some of these people early on. I really think that's the beginning. I think we have the people here in town. We've just got to make it easy for them to say, yes, I'm going to try this.
And Paul Rice responds to the question.
I'm going to once again address the question, because when you say entice new business to town that would pay a living wage, you're kind of suggesting that the businesses here aren't already paying a living wage. And in some ways, in some respects, you're true. And I have a lot of friends who are business owners who pay minimum wage to their employees. I paid my bartenders $10 an hour. It's not a living wage, not in this town. They would make some of that up in tips, but that was hit or miss, not guaranteed. I have friends who can only afford to have an employee one day a week, and their shop's open 7 days. And that's, I know that particular individual. I'm not even sure he's ever had a vacation in the last, 10 years. So I think that new business to town that would pay a living wage, if that's sort of suggesting what's already happening at Howard Street, I think that's a great opportunity for light industrial companies is the idea. Artisan industrial is another word I've heard, but it's essentially the cheese, Mount Townsend Creamery, Atlas, which does things I still don't understand, but companies like that in a place with infrastructure that's provided in a beautiful location, especially if you think the mill is beautiful, which I do, in its way. That's going out on a limb. I shouldn't have gone there, but oh well. That's another question you can ask some other time. Why do you think the mill is beautiful, Paul? Because I don't know. It's old, it's beautiful, it's strange, it's alien. Anyways, that's not the question. New business to town is coming. There's new business coming to town with Howard Street. There's old business that's able to stay here because of Howard Street. There will be other projects like Howard Street once it's proven to be a success, and I truly believe that.
City Council deals with policies, not so much with enticement, I think. Creating a environment, an economic environment in which new businesses could thrive and therefore be able to offer a living wage to their employees is something that the City Council can foster through policy. And it has done so in areas such as Howard Street, but it is not as broad as the question seems to think that it could be. City councilors themselves don't have much actual power individually to entice a business. So as a councilor, what I could do is work with a team of dedicated people who are also in love with Port Townsend, who want to make sure that it is doing the best that it can be to make sure that those policies foster economic growth and development.
This question goes first to Amy Smith. Do you think that Port Townsend is an easy town for riding a bike? What improvements would you make?
I rode my bike for the first time in 3 years today. And it turns out that in order to get to work, I have to ride uphill both ways. So definitionally easy, no. But one of the things that I ran into several times over the course of the day that I really didn't remember is where the bike lanes just kind of end. I'd forgotten about that. And I'd forgotten about the cars that try to turn in front of you. So I do think that there is some room for improvement in biking in Port Townsend. I believe that is something that the city is actively working on already. I know that there have, as we've been doing road improvements, more and more bike lanes have been being put in. And I am looking forward to utilizing those safer bike lanes. Thank you.
And Todd Wexman responds to the question.
Well, I guess you touched on an idea I had. We ought to just level the town, make it easy. I always think when I get on my bike, how many hills am I going to be going up, and will my transmission keep operating? I've got a little story to tell. Jane Witcher rode her bike from, I dropped her off in Anacortes, and she rode her bike to Bar Harbor, Maine. Now, there's somebody with a lot of guts. I can maybe manage five blocks or six.
And Paul Rice responds to the question.
I'd like to call out the question, as usual. This is you, Mayor, isn't it? This is your question. Maybe not. as a biker, I think that Port Townsend is a fine city to bike in if you're young and somewhat occasionally reckless, but wearing a helmet like I am. You have to be aggressive with cars, and you're not guaranteed your own space. You're guaranteed it by law, technically, but when you're actually on a bike facing cars, that's a whole nother world. But I think that bikes and working on reexamining what we're doing with bikes is just a part of a larger question, which for me really, it does connect to transportation as much as it's about people biking places. And that's my hope that on City Council we'll be able to work to expand our transportation options and increase them because they have sort of dwindled since then. And I don't know and quite understand why. And what I found is that there are lots of opinions as to why. And I'm still taking my time to sort through and understand those. But the best thing we can do to cut our emissions as a city is to work on getting people out of their cars, even if it's walking. Hopefully it's biking because that's exercise too. But you know, if it's taking the bus as well. So working with the county and with the committee, which is part county commissioner and part city councilors, to actually address a lot of these issues for using transit. And how do we combine transit and bikes to create kind of a transit, bikes, and walking would be a triple threat position. To have all those things going strongly would be a goal that I'd be working towards. And that's one of those goals that other counselors have told me, Paul, remember, you're going to need like 10 years to accomplish anything. So, but I think that that stuff that's happening now, you know, we're seeing climate change happen now, and we're working on it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. So this question goes first to Todd Wexman. What is your opinion about a task force regarding police and the mentally ill citizens?
I don't know. You want them to be sensitive to the mentally ill, and I think we've got a police department that's highly sensitive to everyone. I don't know what to say about that.
And Paul Rice responds to the question.
I think that the reason this task force is coming around is actually from that particular incident I spoke about when we talked about Mike Evans, which many of us know about. It's written in the paper several times, and I actually actively worked with the police department to figure out exactly what happened. Many of us saw the video, and interpreting the actions, we all have our own interpretations. I have mine of how it went down, and I think it actually was a time where force was applied when it didn't need to be, and if there had been another factor in play, a mediating factor that would have allowed the police to step out and have somebody else who's qualified but also not armed and not trying to control this individual physically, that we would have had a peaceful conclusion to it. So I think that the task force is, as long as the citizens keep paying attention to it and keep saying, this is what we want, we want something like this. If you spend any time in the bars in Port Townsend, you understand. And the Boiler Room, I mean, we're all sort of subject to it being in downtown businesses. We work with folks who are mentally divergent, who have a different frame of mind that we don't always understand. And sometimes they are violent, but there are ones that are not ever going to be violent and do not ever need, essentially, the police to intervene with them in the way that it happened that day. So being able to have this task force create options for those folks who might otherwise be homeless and only be homeless because they're mentally divergent and they don't know how to stay in a home, a task force to work with those folks instead of the police, I think, is absolutely key in helping them and maintaining the peace. Thank you.
One of the things that I see happen on a regular basis is the revolving door of mental health. When people get arrested for doing something, they end up in jail. They are released from jail into homelessness or into an unsafe situation. They then break the law. They end up right back in jail, and there's no mitigating factors to allow that cycle to break. I believe that a task force could potentially be the wedge that could cause that to no longer be a door that's just swinging back and forth. When I was absolutely thrilled when I heard David Timmons speak about this, and I offered to help regardless of whether or not I'm elected to city council. This is something that is hugely beneficial for multiple populations that I work with, and I believe that it, if done correctly, could be nothing but beneficial to Port Townsend and to Port Townsend citizens, both those who have mental health issues and those who deal with them on a regular basis.
Well, thank you all. My little well of questions has run dry. And I want to thank all of you who contributed a question, and thank you for participating with such candor and honesty. It's unusual. I can tell this is your first time, right? You do. Amy, you're next to go first to give a one-minute close, and thank you so much.
As I said at the beginning, I live in Port Townsend on purpose. I tried to live several other places. I live here because I love it. In living here, I have heard so many people who are my age talk about how they can't afford to live here or there's nothing to keep them here. I firmly believe that the best thing that you can do for your youth is raise them to want to come home, to send them out into the world, to get experiences, to come back, and to share those experiences with their community. We need to foster and create, I guess those are backwards, create and then foster a place where that's not only possible and desired, but is the norm. I believe that this is something that I'm working towards regardless. And I believe that I have the ability, and this is something that was mentioned to me during the break. I am supposed to talk myself up a little bit more. So I can do this. And I would appreciate your vote of confidence. Thank you.
And next, a closing statement from Todd Wexman.
I suppose this is the time for me to ask for your vote. In that regard, I'll make a promise. I promise to fight long and hard on behalf of those principles that close our community direction statement of 1996 to maintain and enhance Port Townsend's special character and small town atmosphere.
And finally, a closing statement from candidate Paul Rice.
Well, I'm ready to learn. I've been learning a lot. And while I'm a fast learner, what I keep learning is that I have so much more to learn. And I think that's true through life, and that's always been the Socrates quote that stuck with me, that wisest is he or she who knows she knows not. And I think that every step I take towards better understanding what it means to be on the city council, what it means to be a politician in general, leaves me with more questions, which I suppose is what life is supposed to do, as frustrating as that is. But I plan to keep learning. I plan to be a very active, multi-issue candidate, capable of working on all the different levels necessary for a city councilor, and subsisting off of said wage as well, unless you guys cut it, and preserving the stability that Port Townsend government has known while preparing for the future, which is coming fast. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
And you've been listening to debate by City Council candidates Paul Rice, Todd Wexman, and Amy Smith for Port Townsend City Council member position 6. This has been a debate brought to you by the League of Women Voters. Ruth Gordon has been your moderator. Peter Guerrero has been your host for KPTZ Campaign 2015. And engineer extraordinaire Sonny Flores made it all possible. Thanks again. Don't forget to vote. Ballots out July 15th. They're due back on August the 4th.